Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And joining us right now, a man who won the battle. We were mentioning this earlier.
Right. No doubt about this.
This man shared a name with a congressman. Yeah, right. A congressman for many years. That congressman, after like 30 years in Congress, is now referring to himself just as Pete because he has admitted that he's not as big as this guy. And that, of course, is the great Peter King. How are you, Peter?
I did win. I did notice that.
Yeah.
There you go.
I was really, it's quite an honor, really.
It's impressive. I mean, the thing about Pete King is the guy's been in Congress for a long, long time. And basically what he said is what we already knew. You're more popular. I mean, you're just a bigger deal.
That's all. People know who you are, Peter. I mean, let's be honest. I don't think there's any question about it.
That might have to do with the political climate in America, if you know what I mean.
Maybe. Or it may have to do with your greatness.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah, I think it is, too. I mean, hey, listen, he's not on with Joe and Evan on a Friday, football Friday
right
now.
That is a great point.
I mean, let's all recognize who's really the important Peter King.
We know the answer already.
But by the way, I just have a stat for you. You're going to love this. Peter King, who we're talking to, has over a million Twitter followers.
How many does Pete King have?
Pete King 10? Has less than me. He's at about 34,000.
Wow. That's all you need to know.
That says it all.
It does.
That says it all.
All right, let's start. We're talking about some of the big games this weekend, so we'll start with that. What's your thoughts on Rams-Saints? Let's go there, right there, Pete, on Sunday.
Well, I mean, I covered the Rams last weekend. The one thing that really impressed me, you could look at that game and say, not that they were lucky to win, but that they got a huge break when Ty Montgomery made a stupid play at the end by bringing the ball out of the end zone. However, I think every team goes through something like that in a season. You know, every good team is going to have some breaks. They got a break. They capitalized on it. The one thing that I thought was really impressive is not necessarily that Todd Gurley went down at the 4-yard line instead of scoring, because it's a common sense play. The thing I liked about it is in the huddle, before he ran the ball and, you know, went down at the 4-yard line instead of scoring, everybody in the huddle was saying, remember, don't score, go down, stay in bounds. This is a team that I think is extremely well drilled, is very, very smart. And I think Sean McVay has done a good job not just forming a really good offense, okay, but I think he's done a very good job in making his team being really well drilled and a smart team. And so I think that's going to be a good thing for them going down the stretch. But again, you guys talked about home field. The dangerous thing for the Rams here is that there's a chance that they could play the Saints twice in New Orleans in 10 weeks. And essentially, if you lose the first one, you're going a long way toward having to play the second one. You know, if indeed, obviously, they get in the playoffs and they end up meeting again. So I think that makes this a bigger game than what you would normally think. If you're 8-0, you wouldn't think that a game in week 9 was really vital. And I won't call it vital, because I don't think home field means everything the way it used to be. But it is going to be significant toward home field.
One thing I would say, though, to that, Pete, is that, you know, I look at the – and I don't have the exact schedule in front of me for the Rams the rest of the way, but just the fact that the division they're in, as opposed to the division that the Saints are in. I mean, the Saints got to play the Panthers twice yet. They still got another game with Atlanta, which, even though Atlanta's not having a good year, that's certainly no easy game. I look at that as well. I mean, I look at the division that the Rams are playing in, you know?
Well, you're right about that, but you got to remember two things. I mean, first, you're absolutely right. The the Saints have the Panthers twice in the last 14 days of the season.
Right, right.
And they're, or 15 days, whatever it is.
Right.
But, and so that's obviously troublesome. I think the one other thing, though, remember, Rams, Chiefs, Mexico City in 2 weeks.
Right.
That's
going to
be
true.
That's almost like the game of the year, and they're playing it in Mexico. I mean, it's, and so, and that was, remember, that was a Rams home game. So, you know, it's, you can say, it's no big deal. It's a neutral field, but giving away home field in a game of great consequence against one of the best offenses in football, that could come back to haunt him a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
No, I just was going to say, I mean, the one thing I would say to Pete is that the Ram home field, I mean, we watched the game last week against the Packers. I thought the game was in Lambeau. I mean, there was so many damn Packer fans there.
That was incredible. I thought about it at the time, and then I racked my brain Monday. Said, think of all the NFL games you've covered over the years, and think about loud visiting throngs. And I remember I covered a Steelers-Bucks game in Tampa in the Jerome Bettis, John Lynch days.
Right, right.
And that was a hugely loud crowd for Pittsburgh, maybe 60-40. But the difference with this one, I think, is that, first of all, the crowd was larger anyway. There were 76,000 people there. And there was something about not only the number of Packer fans, I swear it was 65-35, but they were so fired up from the get-go. When the Packers came out, it was like, you would think there's 2 minutes left in the game, and there's, you know, here's the vital play of the game. That's how loud it was just when the Packers came out 10 minutes before the game started. It really was a stunning crowd, and it just goes to show you that probably more than any team, I always think it's the Cowboys, and for a while it was Miami, but I really think the Packers travel the best of any team in the NFL.
Yeah, Steelers are up there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Pittsburgh,
it's close.
Too.
And,
yep.
And I know
they are. Yep.
And to your point, it's never going to be as bad as a Green Bay or a Pittsburgh, but even when they played the Vikings earlier this year, there was a lot of purple in the stands.
I mean,
that's the one thing about home field advantage. I know you're still playing in your own building. They're going to play the Eagles later this year. There's going to be a ton of Eagle fans there, too. L.A., I don't know. Are they really into this thing, especially with two of the – they're both L.A. teams they have, Pete, are actually good football teams. Are they even into this out there?
Look, I don't think the Chargers are ever going to be anywhere near what the Rams are. And the Rams aren't even great at this point in terms of, you know, in terms of a, you know, what I would call a home field crowd. But crowds getting more and more into it for the Rams. They've had some good crowds and their fans are getting into it. But listen, you can't ask a community that hasn't had football for 22 years. And then all of a sudden this team shows up and in year three, they might be the best team in the league. And it's hard to say create instant pandemonium for, and excitement for a team. I think that's a little bit too much to ask. And that's why it really didn't surprise me that it was louder for Green Bay than it was for the Rams.
Mm. Talking, of course, to the great Peter King. Peter, the state of the football Giants right now, obviously not very good. How do you see this thing playing out? Will they give, in spite of what happened with the arrest, Laletta, a shot before the year's over? I mean, how do you see this playing out with the Giants?
Well, one of the mistakes the Giants made in 2017 was, you know, they basically discounted the idea from Ben McAdoo that for the last 5 weeks they should play the backup quarterbacks to see what else they had on their roster. And, you know, we've talked about this before, but McAdoo, as it turns out, was really the only adult in the room. And what happened after that, so they get rid of, you know, their quarterbacks last year, they get two more quarterbacks this year, and, it doesn't. I wouldn't care who they are. You've got to see them. And I understand the Lauletta thing. I mean, I don't really know what happened. I just know what I read. And that's obviously a bad thing for him long term with the Giants. But, you know, if he's on your team and he's on your roster at quarterback, you know, the Giants have to see what they have, both with Tanny and him. And, you know, then I think in the off season, I think you have to decide, are you going all in with a new quarterback? Are you going to see if Eli Manning would be willing to be the mentor for, let's just say, for the sake of argument, Kyle Lauletta and whoever your first round pick is at quarterback, assuming you take one there? I mean, it makes a little bit more sense to me to just make a clean break so that the emotion of Eli Manning kind of goes away. But, you know, we'll see. But I do think that it makes an awful lot of sense to start planning right now in the second half of this lost season for the future.
No, and I agree. And we should have seen Davis Webb last year. But what makes Ben McAdoo the adult? I don't think he handled the benching of Eli Manning all that well. And he made the decision.
Well, how would you handle it? How would you handle it?
I don't think
there's any good way to handle it.
I think there's a better way to handle it.
Better way to handle it probably would have been John Mara to be in the building that day.
Yeah.
He was at a league meeting in New York, and he should have been in the building that day. But you know, look, whatever happened, the point is, very simply, that the Giants got intimidated by their fans and by all the former Giants players.
I agree with that.
How in the world can you do this to poor Eli? Hey, look. Sentimentality means squat in football. It means nothing. And the Giants lost an opportunity, even though, look, I still think it's absurd what happened last year is that, do you really know that Davis Webb it was a nobody and couldn't do it? Do we really know? No, he never got a chance. Never. And so, and then they got rid of him. So that's a waste.
But my problem, Peter, is that they went, but what made it difficult was the fact that the guy they benched Eli for was Geno Smith. If they had benched him,
but it doesn't matter.
That wasn't
going to be, they had five games left. And Geno Smith was going to play a game, maybe two. You can't put Davis Webb in the game when he's never taken any snaps all year in practice.
So then have him take snaps in practice. That's a part of not being prepared for this. I agree. Peter, we agree on part of this.
But listen, at the time, if you're trying to win every game, okay, and Geno Smith is your backup, okay, now maybe McAdoo could have, you know, spent a quarter of every practice changing it up and giving Davis Webb some snaps. That's fine. But everybody is losing sight when they talk, oh, my God, Geno Smith. It's like Geno Smith is Whitey Bulger. You know, it's ridiculous. It is totally absurd.
Well, Geno at least is still
alive.
Talk
about Geno Smith. But it's utterly preposterous.
Well, but he's
a backup quarterback in the NFL. He was going to play 1 to 1.5 games. Big deal. You were still going to see Davis Webb for 3 or 3.5 games.
But they were 2-9 at the time, so it wasn't like they were really trying to win games. It was all about, hey, let's see what we have. We already know what we have in Geno Smith. Everybody knew what was there in Geno Smith. Go right to Davis Webb. I'm telling you, I think it would have made a world of difference with the outcry you heard from Giant fans if they were going to Davis Webb as opposed to Geno. You don't think so?
Listen, I just said what happened. He had not taken any snaps.
So what are you going to do?
Are you going to put him in when he's not ready and totally embarrass the guy? Give him 2 weeks to get ready, and that leaves him 3 weeks to go.
Right, but you're doing that while starting Geno Smith. See, we're going back to the same thing. That was ultimately the biggest problem. I know that Davis Webb needed snaps.
Look,
I agree with you about that.
You know what this is? Here's what this is to me. Here's what all of this discussion is.
Yes.
Okay? This is absolutely, in my opinion, totally, totally ridiculous. The goal at the end of the day would be to say, we know that Eli Manning is not our quarterback of the future. We know that, okay? We're trying to look at alternatives before one of the richest drafts there ever was. So here we are. We're drawing a line of demarcation in our season. We have five games left. three of the games, probably, we're going to start Davis Webb. He's not ready right now, so we're going to start him. You know, Evan, you're making this argument, and I understand it because I heard it 1,000 times last year. It's totally inconsequential because your whole goal is to see Davis Webb, and I get it. But if he's not ready to be seen at that moment, you get him ready. And that's the thing that frustrated me last year about this whole scenario.
Well, agree to disagree on all this, but here's what I'm very curious about. And you know this, you have a feel around the league. We all agree the Giants are probably going to cut Eli Manning at the end of the year. They're going to have the clean break that you mentioned. I'm with you that they should do that. Does he get a starting quarterback job somewhere else? Is there a market for Eli Manning?
I doubt it. The thing that makes the most sense is for him to go to Jacksonville, play out the last 2 years. Maybe he plays, maybe he doesn't. I mean, he'll have a chance to play at some point. If he was on the Jaguars right now, he'd be starting, you know, because Bortles has been so lousy. But somebody hires him as a starting quarterback, I think would be crazy. I'm not saying crazy, but who would hire a 37-year-old quarterback who for the last 6 years really has been a mediocre football player? I don't see it. I'm not saying it's impossible. I just don't see it.
Talking, of course, to Peter King. All right, let's stay in that division. Who do you like in the NFC East right now to come out of that?
I kind of like Washington because I think if you strip away all of the problems that you think they would have, they run the ball really well, and they have a very, very good and underrated defensive front. And that's why I'd like Washington. I mean, Philly obviously has a chance, but I'm probably more in the Washington camp.
And what was interesting about this trade deadline, which I got to admit was a lot of fun, it felt like baseball, was you had all of those teams outside of the Giants, forget them, in this division getting better. I mean, you saw the Eagles go out and get Golden Tate, the Cowboys, obviously, Amari Cooper, and the Redskins got Ha Ha Clinton Dix. Of those moves, give me your thoughts on who you think improved the most based on those trade deadline moves we saw.
Well, even though I don't love Amari Cooper, I think probably Amari Cooper, you know, is going to help the Cowboys more than either one of the other ones. But I will just say this. Golden Tate is a really, really good football player who's a just-add-water inside or outside receiver. He can play anywhere. He's a physical, fearless guy. I think he's going to be a really good addition. But, I mean, the Cowboys just so desperately needed a body to play wide receiver that I think probably Amari Cooper is going to have the best numbers of those two guys.
Interesting.
Were you surprised, by the way, that you have a team like Green Bay, and I understand how it impacts next year with Ha Ha Clinton Dix, and even Detroit, and I get how that impacts them next year with Golden Tate, but you saw teams who I think still have a shot. I mean, I think the Packers still have a shot, who made moves more based on next year than right now and trying to win right now. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I agree with you. I really like Golden Tate. I like Ha Ha Clinton Dix. I think the Packers looked at this and say we'd rather have a four for the future, a potential starting player for 4 years versus having nine more games or eight more games of Ha Ha Clinton Dix. It's debatable. It's very debatable. But general managers are unafraid to make moves now, much more so than they used to be. And I think two of the young general managers, Bob Quinn in Detroit, Brian Gutekunst in Green Bay, that's a great example of two guys who aren't afraid to make moves.
All right, so through the first eight games, your thoughts on Sam Darnold?
I'm bullish on him, but any rookie quarterback is going to have a difficult time early on. I mean, if he's asked to play right from the jump, any rookie quarterback is going to have some rough days. You're seeing it with Baker Mayfield. I think it was tremendously important for the Kansas City Chiefs to bring in Patrick Mahomes and have him sit behind Alex Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Reid told me before the season that Patrick Mahomes doesn't owe Alex Smith, a thank you or anything. He owes him a mansion for everything he did for him. And look, you'll be able to say the same thing in this case. But I think because Josh McCown is
yes.
going to be great long term. But I think it would have been better if Darnold could have sat for a year. I think at that position, there's so much more to learn by sitting than playing. You know, unless you're an absolute total exception of the rule.
What would you do? And this includes the Jets, because I think they're going to be one of the teams really interested. How would you treat Le'Veon Bell in free agency based on everything we've seen this year with him not showing up, so much uncertainty about his future?
Well, I'm not paying him $15 million a year. You've seen that there's a $700,000 running back, James Conner, who by the end of this year, if he stays healthy, is going to almost duplicate, and is certainly going to have more touchdowns than Le'Veon Bell normally does, but is going to duplicate Le'Veon Bell. So running back is a real tricky position. I think Le'Veon Bell is a great football player, but he's not the only person who can be great at the running back position, and you're seeing that. So what will it do to him? I'm probably never going to pay a running back $15 million a year, no matter how good he is. I mean, if you factor in the Todd Gurley money, okay? If you factor in the Todd Gurley money in his contract over a six-year period, he's making an average of $11 million a year. That seems fair to me. I think it's just way too much money, comparatively speaking, to pay a running back what Le'Veon Bell wants, which I guess is about $17 or $18 million a year.
Now, look, I'm very biased when I ask this question, so I want to let you know my biases before I ask it, and that's Todd Gurley's my guy, all right? He's riding me, hopefully, to a fantasy title. So I've watched a lot of Todd Gurley and a lot of the Rams. I really think he's the MVP of the league, and that's no knock on Patrick Mahomes, just – I think he's that important to that offense, as good as Goff.
You're right. I mean, I can see it, and I've said this. We're only through 8 weeks so far,
sure.
But there's a chance I'll vote for him for MVP, and there's a chance he will be the MVP. It's just my feeling that, you know, look, I'm not saying that he and Jared Goff and Aaron Donald are going to cancel each other out, but I do think that there's three potential megastars on that team. And it's a little bit different in baseball. You know, in baseball, I could see Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez being whatever, 1-3, 1-4 in the MVP voting, whatever it is. But it's just different in football. In football, at least to me, you pick one guy. And it would be very hard for me to put two Rams, like, in the top three of MVP voting. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I think right now Gurley has a heck of a shot, and we'll see how the rest of the year goes.
Can anybody, and I understand how great Kansas City's been, I understand all of that, but can anybody really stop the Patriots in the AFC?
Well, you know, look, I think Kansas City's defense is getting a little bit better as the season goes on. They're getting a little healthier. At some point, theoretically, they'll get Eric Berry back, and that's a big part of their up-the-middle defense. My feeling about the Patriots is that can anybody beat them? Yes. In fact, the Kansas City Chiefs, if they had better clock management down the end of that game, they probably would have beaten them, and they scored 40 points in Foxborough after scoring 42 points in Foxborough last year. So, somebody can beat them, and I think it's the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm not saying they will. But
right, right.
I think they're very, very yin and yang. I think they're very close.
Interesting.
Well, we'll see. It'll be a fun time of year. We got some.
I need to see the Chiefs win a playoff game.
Yeah, well,
I mean, really.
I know. Well, just
in a
remember,
lost at
just
home.
Remember, Patrick Mahomes has not
didn't
quarterback them 2 years against Pittsburgh or
right.
last year against Tennessee. So we'll see.
Right.
We
right.
shall. Peter, always a pleasure.
Peter,
appreciate you coming on.
Are you running for anything?
Thanks a lot,
guys. You thinking about running for some kind of election before too long?
I want to see what happens on Tuesday. I think.
Uh-oh.
I'm definitely not thinking about running, but we need to save our country here.
I would love
not to
see
be political, but
can I?
But anyway,
I would
we'll
say this.
See.
This isn't political. I would love to see you move to Long Island and challenge Pete King. We could have a Pete King versus Peter King election.
By the way,
that'd be so confusing.
By the way,
hey, you know what? I'll tell you what. I'd like to debate him because
Tell
you, I can talk.
All right. Well, we actually could pull that off if you really want to. Trust
me. Ernie brought up something about you being commissioner.
Oh,
come on.
Now, the one thing I would say to that, though,
ooh.
If you're going to be commissioner, you know, you got to do something about the. Let me ask you about this, okay? Before we let you go, because this is something that drives me absolutely right now, and it gets worse every year. To me, it's worse than it's ever been, and that's the officiating in this league. They call stuff they shouldn't call. They don't call stuff they should. It's an absolute disgrace in my mind. Some of the stuff that I've seen this year.
You know, look, it's a game that is very fast, and I don't know how you can improve officiating.
Don't you think they have too much control over the games? Don't you think there's too many stupid rules in this to begin with?
I mean, we could have an hour to discuss.
Yeah, well, probably more than
that. But I mean, my feeling is. I don't get too fired up about the officials. I think it's a fairly it's like officiating in the NBA. You can call a foul on every possession. Sometimes they call them, sometimes they don't. It's hard to get too fired up about it. But I just think it's a really, really hard sport to officiate.
Mm. We appreciate it, my friend. Thank you, Peter.
All right,
guys. Thank you.
The great Peter King on the football.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.